So if the air cannons break all their pumpkins when they shoot them, one of the centrifugal machines or even the kids' machines could win the event.
Does that happen a lot, that they just don't quite make it out?
Well, yeah, it happens quite a bit that they break a lot of pumpkins. They put too much pressure on them.
Yeah.
You know, the pumpkin explodes, and one of the rules is that the pumpkin has to leave the machine intact.
That was an excerpt from an interview heard on the CBC program As It Happens, one of the many quirky interviews that you can hear just about every weeknight at 8 o'clock if you listen to As It Happens here on the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 8 on this snowy Tuesday morning, December the 9th. We have been broadcasting As It Happens on the Ideas Network probably for about half of the program's 40 years. As It Happens just celebrated its 40th anniversary. We've had the program in different time slots. Currently, it's 8 p.m. on weeknights. And I know from many of you that As It Happens is one of your favorite public radio programs. And many of you miss hearing it early in the mornings when we used to play it from 5 until 6 a.m. just before my program started. And I miss having it there, too. I almost always got a chuckle out of As It Happens just before we began our little talk show. And I think you'll get a chuckle out of this hour, too, because we will remember some of the best moments from the As It Happens files, and we will welcome your favorite moments or your questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are very happy to have with us Mary Lou Finley, one of Canada's most trusted journalists. She hosted As It Happens from 1997 to 2005, and she is the author of The As It Happens Files, Radio That May Contain Nuts. The book is not yet available in the United States, but you can find it on the internet, for example, at amazon.ca. Mary Lou Finley joins us now from Toronto, Canada. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much. That voice, that brings me back.
5 a.m. you used to play the show.
We did.
Oh, well.
Well, you know, we kind of joked sometimes, too, that it was really As It Happened because we were playing it a day late. During that. In fact, it was much of the time that you were hosting is when we were doing that. And I loved it. I loved, though, listening to it. It was just sometimes it was serious and sometimes it was not so serious. And that's the charm of As It Happens. It wasn't your typical, boring news show.
I hope not.
Yeah.
There were boring moments, perhaps, but we tried not to do boring shows.
Yeah, not too many. Where did the concept come from to do all these interviews with newsmakers that anywhere from, you know, some sort of terrible serious news event to an animal story?
Well, the concept dates back to, as you say, about 40 years ago. As It Happens, the show that we have today, which is a 5-day-a-week, hour and a half in Canada of news and current events and music and humor, originated, it was an amalgam of two different shows that had their beginnings in about 1968. And one of them was a Monday night show called As It Happens, and it was live across Canada. So it started about 6:30, say, on the East Coast in Newfoundland. And it just stayed on the air until about 8 o'clock in British Columbia, which was a very long night for the people doing the show. But that was just one night a week. And then there was another program on Friday nights, a new show called Radio Free Friday. And after a short time, they amalgamated the two programs. But the phone out idea was there with the Monday night show right from the beginning. Instead of having people call in to the radio, the hosts decided that they would get on the phones and they would find phone numbers of people all around the world that they wanted to talk to and we would call out. And that simple concept is still the basis of the show.
Oh, I love the name of your book or the subtitle, Radio That May Contain Nuts. Because
there are a few.
It was a little nutty. Some of the people you talked to were kind of nutty, and you all had a good sense of humor. So, you know, your producers and hosts were a little nutty at times. So, and you always did. You were always on the lookout for that ordinary person with an extraordinary story.
Well, you know, when the news is a bit grim, as it is now, for instance, it doesn't hurt to be able to turn the corner every now and then and talk to somebody who has established a sanctuary for garden gnomes or who likes to walk across England with a fridge on his back. England has a large number of eccentrics, we've discovered.
And, you know, I got some emails yesterday because I had mentioned that we were going to be talking with you. And one listener said, oh, please ask Mary Lou about the interview she did with the man who was walking his dog by a pond and a fish jumped out and ate his dog. Do you remember that?
No, you know, well, barely. The terrible thing about this sort of event, like a live show with people bringing forth their memories, is that sometimes I have forgotten the stories because they happened a long time ago and I didn't happen to listen to them again when I was researching the book. But as soon as you mention it, I think, yes, 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 wasn't that a wonderful story? I had forgotten it, though.
Well, yeah, because you do so many interviews. You probably, when you were hosting, did, at least two or three interviews every day.
Oh, probably 8 or 10, so about 10,000 in 7 or 8 years. You know, I do remember, though, Adosha the dog, because I looked her up for the book, and she was not eaten. She was let out by her owner to do her business in the backyard one day somewhere in California. And she jumped the fence and ran out on the road, and she was hit by a car.
Oh, I remember that.
And do you remember? And
yes,
then the police came along, and they thought the dog was in extremis, so they shot her to put her out of her misery. And then they picked her up, and they had to do something else, I guess. So they took her, they put her in the cruiser, and they took her to some yard and stuck her in the freezer till the Humane Society people could come along. And when they did, they discovered that Dosha had not died. Dosha was fighting for her life. She'd been hit by a car, shot, and frozen.
And she still lived.
Bless her heart, she was not going to die. and we talked to Luetta, who was Dosha's human. She was just bringing her home from the vet.
Wow! Yeah, I do remember that, and we tried to find some of the interviews or archived audio on the website for As It Happens, and it's not easy to find.
Some of it, it's there, I think, back to about April 2004, isn't it?
Yeah,
and then earlier than that, it's only available through the CBC archives. You sort of have to be here in person.
Yeah, I was looking for some of the stories from the book, and we weren't able to find some of these classics, at least to play. I did play a little excerpt from one we did find on the website. It wasn't one cited in your book, I don't believe, about a pumpkin chunking competition in Delaware where contestants hurl pumpkins through.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Smashing pumpkins before the smashing pumpkins.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite parts of the program is what you call, I like a lot of it, but the talk back section. And here's one just from earlier this year.
My name is Chris McInnes, calling from Winnipeg, Manitoba. My vote goes to a song called St. James Infirmary. It's a very old blues song. It's been described by some aficionados as the bluest of the blues, and it goes a little bit like this. I went down to St. James Infirmary, and I saw my baby.
All right, maybe that's enough of that. It was a section on what's the most depressing song ever, and people did some sort of segment on that, and then people just kept on adding example after example to the talkback phone machine.
Yeah. Long before American Idol, Joy, yeah, people had no compunction about auditioning on our program.
That's right. And that talk back, it was always fun, too, because it was sort of the, you sometimes would refer to it as, was it the dance section of the, you know, when you'd play some
Barbara
music.
Barbara Bunn, yeah, my co-host, always refers to it as the dance section, and there's music. Yeah.
Well, we want to know what your favorite moments are from As It Happens, the popular program from the CBC that you can hear on the Ideas Network every weeknight at 8 o'clock. As It Happens, last month celebrated its 40th anniversary, and we are celebrating that with the author of the As It Happens Files, Radio That May Contain Nuts, Mary Lou Finley. Our guest, she is one of Canada's most trusted journalists. She hosted As It Happens from 1997 to 2005, and she is the author of the As It Happens Files. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That is the theme song you hear just before As It Happens from the CBC. This was, in fact, let me ask our guest. Mary Lou Finley was the host of As It Happens for a number of years. That particular ditty was composed by a Canadian jazz musician, Mo Kaufman.
Mm-hmm. A very, very popular and successful musician who's recently died. The piece is called Curried Soul, and it was adopted right at the outset as the theme, or fairly early on as the theme for the program. Every now and then somebody would make a half-hearted stab at changing it or updating it or getting a new theme. It was reorchestrated once, but when they tried to drop that theme, there was a revolution among the listeners. So last year or a few years ago, when I was just about leaving the show, I remember hearing from one listener who said, yes, the music is outdated and it sounds old, but don't you dare change it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, don't. I mean, it really does. It tells you what's coming up. But again, another hard piece of audio to find on the internet. At least it was for us.
Is it?
We just took it from last night's show.
good. Yes. Just steal it wherever you can.
Right. We are looking for your favorite moments from As It Happens as we talk with Mary Lou Finley. She is the author of the As It Happens Files, Radio That May Contain Nuts. The book is not yet available in the United States, but can be purchased on the internet at indigo.ca, chapters.ca, or amazon.ca.
We're probably at Random House, too.
Okay.
Which is the publisher's. Yeah.
And let's go to the phones and take our first caller, Lorraine in Green Bay. Hi, Lorraine. You're on the air.
Hi. This is such a pleasure. I have to say, I was very new to your program one day, and I was driving home, and I heard your commentary on Pluto being downgraded from a planet, and I wasn't so familiar with the format. I didn't realize how tongue-in-cheek you were. I had to pull over on the side of the road. I was absolutely rolling in the car with laughter, and I wondered if your commentaries are available online.
Ooh. If it happened after 2004, April, perhaps they are. If it was a commentary as opposed to an interview, too, it was probably written by one of our really dazzling writers like Chris Howden or Adam Killick, formerly, and read by Barbara Budd. I do remember when we downgraded poor Pluto. Yeah.
And he was talking about a grotesque, Pluto's only other claim to fame being owned by a grotesquely large mouse that only wears pants, whose best friend is a grotesquely large duck who only wears a shirt.
That's right. That would be Chris Howden, I imagine, who wrote that. He's a very funny writer.
Thank you very much, Lorraine, for the call. Yeah. Mary Lou, tell us how the program works. How many people work on it? How do you find these nuts?
Well, there's a small army of people who put the show together. On any given day, somewhere between 10 and 13 or 14 people. including the hosts. And they get together every morning at 10:30. They've already been at work for a couple of hours, looking, scouring the internet and the newspapers and the morning television and radio for stories for what they want to put on the air that day. And at 10:30, we all sit around in a circle and go through the ideas and through the categories, you know, what needs to go today, what's our lead, national, international stories, science, humor, dead blues musicians, British eccentrics, all the various things that go into the makeup of the program. And are there any scripts? You know, sometimes the writer will feel inspired to write something like the Pluto. Usually it's his suggestion.
Right.
If that's what he wants to do.
And you started the program, co-hosting the program. Was it the weekend that Princess Diana died?
Yeah. She died, you know, overnight, Saturday night, Sunday morning. And my first show as host was Monday. So it was an unusual show in that it was not the usual potpourri of serious and silly and grave and humorous. It was pretty much just Diana.
Yeah.
But we had a great variety of guests, as I recall. We had people talking about, well, we had her step-grandmother, Dame Barbara Cartland, to start with. And we had the editors of British newspapers talking about her as a media icon. And we had landmines experts talking about her campaign to ban landmines and so on.
Yeah, and you say that normally you don't devote the entire hour
No.
to one topic, but you always are looking, even when it comes to the, you know, the real news, looking for a different angle, something that maybe people aren't going to hear everywhere else.
Yeah, well, we have to because, you know, you get the news before we go on the air. There's a half hour national newscast on CBC Radio, and what we try to do is look at things from a different angle or go into greater depth. The way, you know, most current affairs shows and talk shows will do.
Let's take another call. Stephanie in Madison joins us. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Oh, this is such a blast. I actually changed an appointment so I could make sure I listen to this show. And I love As It Happens. Yeah, really witty, wonderful, and very, very human. There's something I've been listening to Canadian radio recently, and there's something a subtle difference. It's really nice. But I've listened to As It Happens for a long time, and really was touched by the tribute shows. It's moved to tears in some cases, and really laughed a lot too. And but I have a favorite story that happened recently. And I actually called on TalkBack. Your host, Barbara Budd, was interviewing this guy. He's a comedian, Robert Einstein, I think is his name. And he was talking, and he told a joke, and they had to leap out part of it and then just share the punchline. And I was like, kind of laughing and mad at the same time. I was like, come on, you know, you cut me out of a really, really good joke. They had determined they really couldn't play the whole joke. And, you know, I remember calling and saying, come on, you know, I want to hear this joke. But it's just so much fun. And I always enjoyed you and Barbara very much together, and the current co-host Carol Off and
Carol,
just
yeah.
are a lot of fun. You sound like real down home girls, but it's very intelligent, very witty. I love the puns, the plays on words. So,
well, thank you very much, Stephanie, for the call. You do write about the once in a while profanity that might happen during an As It Happens interview. And while you would air that in Canada, it's here in the States where it's bleeped through Minnesota Public Radio.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, I don't want our listeners to have the impression that we just go around cursing and
right.
swearing all the time. We don't. But every once in a while, one of the guests will say something. Or in one memorable occasion, a former host, when she was talking to a farmer in England about his big cabbage, and he couldn't hear a word she was saying either because he was hard of hearing.
Although, funny story.
Yeah, we think it was because he'd been to the pub all day. Anyway, Barbara from at that time, she was having a bad day and she was tired, and at some point she just yelled at him. You know, I said, "What did you feed your GD cabbage?" And we thought also that this was not going to go on the air. The producer at the time stuck the interview in the drawer and thought, you know, well, that was a waste of time. But they brought it out at the end of the year because there was a blooper. You know, they'd collected their bloopers and their failed interviews, and they were going to put together a humorous package at the end of the year. And they pulled it out, and it was just a runaway hit. But we can use the occasional, you know, swear word on our airwaves if it's in context and we're not taking advantage of people or exploiting the situation. And I don't think the FAA rules really permit you to do that. So sometimes we've let something go through, and we get really agitated calls from Minnesota Public Radio, which takes the show and farms it out. You know, and they say, we'll all lose our license if you don't let us know ahead of time.
Well, right.
We need to bleep it out.
I think radio stations and TV stations, too, in the States got a little paranoid, especially after the big fines were imposed by Congress after the Janet Jackson
thing. You know, yeah.
Normally, I think that in the old days, I don't think a gosh darn would, you know, would warrant a bleep. But now everybody's
right.
Worried about it.
Well, yeah. we're just careful. We tried not to get you into trouble.
Right. But that was a funny, yeah, that was a funny interview. She wanted to ask him about his giant cabbage.
Yeah.
And every time she asked a question, he'd say, what? Pardon?
Yeah.
Huh? You know,
yeah.
And he would never be able to answer any question. And they were such funny questions, too, that, I mean, they're not typical questions. Like I'm asking right now, she would make a question by a statement. You could roll that cabbage down a hill and it would kill somebody.
Yeah.
And she's shouting it. And he's saying, what?
He can hardly blame him for saying what to that question. What? Why would I do a thing like that?
But it was that was a funny way. And there's so many funny stories. The one that is funny and tragic at the same time. You write about the chicken or the rooster that had its head cut off, and then it survived too. I mean, a lot of animals going through tragedies and then surviving.
Yeah. It's the survival we celebrate. Yeah.
But seriously, tell that story about Mike the headless rooster.
Mike the headless chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, rooster as he was. You're right. But he was going to become Thanksgiving dinner. And one day, this happened quite a long time ago, and we heard about it because the town of Fruta, Colorado, was launching an annual festival in honor of Mike, who, after he had his head cut off, another animal that refused to die. And when the Olsons, the farmers, Mr. and Mrs., discovered that Mike, in fact, seemed to be perfectly well, other than that he didn't have a head. I mean, he was running around and functioning and trying to grow. They said they could feed him by dropping little pellets down his gullet.
Isn't that...
I know.
And then he dies from what?
He choked on one of those kernels. But he lived for 18 months.
Without a head.
And he went on tour, Barbara... Sally Edgington told us this, and I nearly could not speak. He went on tour with a two-headed calf.
Oh, no. So,
and then finally, choked to death. Poor Mike. But so they have an annual festival now in Fruta, and we just wanted to celebrate Mike's spirit and perseverance.
Well, speaking of perseverance, tell us the story of the man who wouldn't drown.
This is another American story. Mm-hmm. This was a man, Ignacio Siberio, that we heard about one dark December day a number of years ago. He was a Miami lawyer, and he'd gone spear fishing one day. He went alone because the weather was so bad nobody would go with him. There was a huge wind and big waves, and it was just ugly out there. But he loved fishing, so he went out. And while he was beneath the surface trying to kill some fish, the wind turned around, and his boat took off for the middle of the Atlantic. And he came up, and he could just see it. He could just catch glimpses of it in the waves, but he couldn't catch it. He tried swimming after it for about an hour. And then he thought he'd have to give up the boat or else he would just waste all his energy and die. And then he thought, well, I'm going to die anyway. What am I going to do out here? Nobody knows I'm here. I'll never last through the night. And then he thought about he reviewed his life. He thought about his family, whom he loved, loved him, how sad they were going to be when they found out that he'd drowned and just before Christmas, and he would ruin Christmas for all his loved ones. So then he made up his mind that he wasn't going to die. And about that time, he was aided in this determination by finding a boy that was out there in the middle of the waves, not where it, having no business there, but it was there. And he managed to cling to the boy, and he devolved a very complicated scheme of mental exercises and physical exercises to keep himself awake so he wouldn't fall asleep, he wouldn't succumb to hypothermia, he wouldn't drown, and he wouldn't let his muscles seize up, because he thought that if the wind turned around the next morning, what he would do was he would strike for shore, and with the sun up, he would know which way that was. So sure enough, when they picked him up the next morning, when they realized he was missing, they sent out a plane. In the daylight, they found him, and he was swimming for shore. And Ignacio was 80 years old when this happened.
Which was an amazing story in itself, but then it gets even better when you check back a couple of years later.
Right.
Yeah, and, well, and you hear that this is not the first time, or not the last time this was going
to happen. Not the last time. Yeah. I did it for the book, Joy. Mm-hmm. I thought, I wonder if Ignacio's still around. So I called him up just to say hello and how was he. He was at his office, and I said, did you ever have any other adventures like that terrible day you spent in the water? 20 hours he was in the water. He said, oh, yes, it happened again the next week. My jaw dropped.
This guy, and then he had all sorts of other. I mean, the guy, he was accident prone. It's a wonder he made it to 80 something.
I know. He has great stories.
Let me take a call. Another caller, okay. Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, as everybody always says when they call Talkback, I love your show. And the episode I think I remember the most was when Barbara Budd wasn't there for about 2 months, and nobody knew what had happened to her. And finally, one day, I think it was on April 1st, she called in, and there was a whole lot of noise in the background. It sounded like a bar. And he said, well, where are you? What happened to you? And she said, CBC has given me a grant to go to every city we've mispronounced on As It Happens. And apparently there were all kinds of outraged calls from people who believed that that was the case. And I think you finally enlightened people. She came back a couple of days after that. But, April Fools, I thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard on radio.
That one's in the book, isn't it, Mary Lou?
It is in the book, Anne, and you'll love it because it was even worse. It wasn't even the CBC that had given her the grant, she said. It was the Canada Council, which is a big arts granting council, like your National Endowment for the Arts. So it was taxpayer money that came from the government for great art. And when she said that she had got a grant for, you know, traveling the world to visit the towns she'd mispronounced on the air, people just went berserk, you know. This is so typical of the Art Canada Council. A few people said, what a lovely idea. I'm so glad the Canada Council is funding this. Barbara called from Reading. Can I just say this, Joy? Because you're going to talk about Menominee before the end of the show, right?
Probably.
Okay, all right. We just got to talk about Menominee, Wisconsin.
Right. And, well, and did she mispronounce that as...
When you're ready.
All right. Well, how did she... She was known for mispronouncing the names of towns?
No, she didn't mispronounce a lot of towns, but she had done a couple. She had Nyack, New York, I guess, came out something like Nyack, and the Juan de Fuca Strait out in British Columbia came out as something that we shouldn't repeat on the air.
All right. And how did she pronounce Menominee?
It wasn't Menominee. It was that when she called, she said she was in a noisy place indeed. She said she was calling from a pub in Reading, England. And the thing about Reading was that it had become another sort of tradition in the show, a standing joke. And that was that whenever we had an eccentric, a crazy story from England, we had located it in relation to Reading, not to London or anything like that. We'd say, you know, well, If it was the Ann Atkins who ran the Sanctuary for Garden Gnomes, we might say, and she is so many miles northwest of Reading, which would be 627 average size garden gnomes laid end to end, that kind of thing. So one day we were talking to a chap in Menominee, Wisconsin, who'd lost his moose. And they had a 7 foot tall fiberglass moose outside the moose lodge. And Mr. Tillison, I think his name was. And it was the second time the moose had gone astray. So we were concerned about that. But we thought, what a great day, Menominee. We should have a place like Reading in the U.S. that we can refer the otter stories to. So then we had a contest and let the listeners suggest their names. And we had lots of great suggestions, including Peoria and someplace called Normal.
Sure, in Illinois.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Illinois, that's right. But, you know, the one that won was Menominee.
But, you know, there are different Menominees in Wisconsin, too, so then it makes it confusing. We have Menominee Falls and the Menominee Indian Reservation.
So I discovered when I went on the net to try and make sure I was spelling Menominee correctly for the book, I found out all kinds of curious things. Is it true, for instance, that the city of Menominee, population 15,000, is contained within the town of Menominee?
Very well could be, because we have lots of towns and villages and units of local government. I, you know what? We can put that question to listeners. Somebody in Menominee can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Mary Lou Finley. She was one of the hosts of the popular As It Happens program from 1997 to 2005, you hear As It Happens from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, weeknights on the Ideas Network. We currently air it at 8 o'clock at night. And I know it is one of your favorite programs. It is serious and not so serious. And we are welcoming your favorite moments. What do you like best about this show? Do you remember something from the show that you want to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen and her guest talking about the bailout proposal that's being negotiated right now between the White House and Congress. Will the car makers get $15 billion in aid? More on that coming up after 9 o'clock. Right now, we are talking with Mary Lou Finley. She is the author of The As It Happens Files, Radio That May Contain Nuts. It's some of the best of As It Happens, which just celebrated its 40th anniversary. It's a book that's not yet available in the United States, but it can be purchased on the Internet. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you have a question for Mary Lou Finley or if you have a favorite moment that you would like to share on the air. A listener named Jill emails, how do you go about getting interviews with relatives or confidants of very high up political officials, dictators, etc.? We've always been amazed that As It Happens obtains access to these people when world news organizations don't. So I guess you just mentioned that you talked with Princess Di's stepmother. I mean, you do. So you go after relatives or people very close to newsmakers too sometimes, and are able to. I mean, you're amazed too how these producers can find the numbers of some of these people.
I am amazed. I'm often floored, and often the host now Carol Off, who does the interviews. There's hardly time, but, you know, every now and then we'd come out of the studio and say, where did you get that number? How did you find that person? And they have various stratagems for doing it. The pros among them have found ways over the years, and I guess they kind of pass on their tricks to other people. Once I remember we were talking to, it was just a reporter we were trying to reach, but in the midst of some crisis, I can't remember what country it was, but I think it was Beirut, actually. And I said, how did you reach them? And the producer said, well, I went through his Rolodex and I had a number for a person who used to be in Beirut for the Christian Science Monitor or, you know, the Globe and Mail in Toronto or something. And I figured that reporters tend to pass on their apartments to other reporters. So I just called that number and hoped that the person who was there would still be a reporter, and was. So it was an entree into a situation that we wanted. Another time I remember Pam Wallen, who was a producer at the time, had found a number for Indira Gandhi's palace. Mm-hmm. She may have got it from the bell operator. You know, we used to use the bell operators a lot. And she called, but it was never answered. And she called and called and called. She called every day for weeks. And one day, she just made it a habit, you know, every day between 10 o'clock while she was having her coffee or something, she'd call this number in New Delhi. And one day, a woman answered the phone and said hello. And Pam said, oh, this is Pam Wallen calling from Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Toronto. I'm a host for a program called As It Happens, and we would so much like to have an interview with Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. And there was a pause, and then the lady said, what would you like to talk to me about? said, oh, my gosh, she's there. So they did the interview immediately. She was on the line.
And that, it sounds like that when you are getting the interviews, often it does sound like you are just, you know, calling someone up
just
cold.
Just nab them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that's the magic of As It Happens.
Mm. Yeah. One day I was talking to somebody about another situation in France. And all the time we were doing the interview, I could hear through my headset, because I get very clear sounds, kind of a swishing noise in the background. And we did the interview and about some serious matter in that was going on in France at the time. And at the end, I said, would you mind if I just have one more question to ask you? Are you in the bathtub? And he said, he laughed, and he said, yes, I am. I could hear the water swishing around.
And you could name that tune, huh? Or that sound. Oh, isn't that funny? You didn't need that image, though, I bet. Let's go now to Jerry in Genesee Depot, who's been waiting. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Good morning. Years ago, I thought you were on in the morning here. Between 5 and 6. But anyway, somewhere I heard a song. You often play interesting music at the end, and I found out by calling up there right away and writing it down that it was a dance or a song from Frida, a movie. And as I pursued that a little bit, I'm a dancer. I've been to Canada about 3 times for Toronto for Caravan and all that stuff. But anyhow, I traced it down. And then here about a year ago, someone interviewed the singer, a Latino woman with lots of moxie, on the radio, and I called in again, and it was very interesting. But sometimes the music you play at the end is a piece, and I think, wow, that's really something. And then I try to find out what it is. I don't have access to a PC, but I do have your telephone number. And I really call to tell you that you're a dose of reality for us down here once in a while. So that's all I've got to say.
Thank you very much, Jerry, for calling.
The music, the soundtrack from Frida was great, wasn't it? It was lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you talk about, again, he remembers the dance portion of the program, too.
Yeah.
But you had a story in the book about, I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to look for it now, too. I think it was, it had to do with Bolero. Do you recall that one? It was about how some people liked it, some people hated it. And again, that probably started, sparked a big talk back thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm. No, we love these. We really invite controversy over the silliest things. And this was, I guess that we didn't really intend to be controversial, but I'm not a big fan of Bolero. Mm-hmm. I like much of Ravel's music, but Bolero just makes my teeth ache. And we had come through some Olympics where it seemed every skating pair was dancing to Bolero, and all the skating had to be watched with this really repetitious, awful music. And so one day, one of the producers noticed that a woman, a psychologist in England, had done a study of Bolero and thought that Ravel was mad when he wrote it. And I said, you know, slapped my thigh and thought, of course he was. So we had Dr. Eva, what was her name? I'll remember it in a second, on. And I'm looking it up in the book. She said, in fact, that it was a very repetitious piece. Her niece, who was a musician, had said, you know, there's one little theme that's repeated 17 times running. And that it was not typical of his other work, and that he had had some moments of extreme forgetfulness, which she diagnosed as something or other.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was British psychologist.
Said, you know,
yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, of course he was nuts when he wrote it. Well, that did raise a storm of talkback response. Some people agreed and some people didn't.
That's funny. Yeah, I found it here. British psychologist Eve Sobolska.
Was the
person you were interviewing. And what a funny first question. I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say that it comes as no surprise to me that Bolero may be the product of a diseased mind. I'll bet that got the talkback line going. We have other,
oh, it did.
Yeah, we have other callers. Martha in the town of Menominee, the city of Menominee. Where are you from, Martha? Martha, hi, are you there?
Quarter mile as the crow flies from the city limit, but I'm actually in the town of Menominee. You're absolutely correct. It's very strange. I moved here from the Twin Cities a few years ago, and it took me a long time to figure out where to pay my taxes and who got this bill and who was responsible for plowing the streets, but it is a little tricky. Lately, with the economy, we've been taking to calling it me no money.
Oh, yeah, me no money.
But it's not a township. It's a town, right?
It is a town. The town
that's
of Menominee
so weird.
Surrounds the city. Yes, that's right. So we're
love
the lookouts,
it.
I guess.
I love that, me no money. Martha, thank you very much for the call. So then,
I really want to visit Menominee.
Yeah, and so you do were on the show referring to places in the States that were so many miles from Menominee, Wisconsin?
We did it for a while. We mm-hmm. did. And then, I don't know, we just kind of we didn't keep it up. I guess the producers weren't as keen on that as they were on Reading. Maybe
yeah.
they weren't keen on Reading either, but we had been doing it so long, it was almost an automatic response.
It's quite funny.
Yeah. Menominee Falls now is a village, right?
I'm not positive.
It's listed
it's, yeah.
as a village of 32,000 people, which is like more than twice as big as the city of Menominee. I'm just entranced. Enchanted by Wisconsin.
We like our townships and villages and cities and units of government. I know that we have a lot of them. We have so many other callers. Let me go to Roger in Duluth. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my question is concerning Ellen Maitland's reading of The Shepherd on Christmas Eve. I heard it the first time driving back up to Duluth from Milwaukee. Oh, probably 20 years ago on a very rural stretch of road, so I could identify very much with the pilot. Are there other stories that you have concerning The Shepherd? It's a wonderful piece of reading. So I'll hang up and let you discuss it on the air.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Roger, I had the same experience the first time I ever heard it as a listener. I was driving on a lonely stretch of road from Toronto to Ottawa through a snowstorm, trying to get home for Christmas dinner, and the storm had held me up. It was late. It was dark. And this story, this magical story, written by Frederick Forsyth, was being read by Al Maitland, and it's about a pilot in the 1950s trying to make it, bring his plane home on Christmas Eve in England, across the channel, and he gets lost in the fog, and he can't see anything, and he doesn't have instruments. His instruments have cacked out, and he gets guided down by another plane. I'll just say that, and the other plane is called the Shepherd plane because he comes in front of him and waggles his wings and says, "Follow me," and so he lands safely, but. There's a twist to the story, which I won't give away, although many people have heard it by now. We play it every Christmas Eve. Alan Maitland read it at least 20 years ago, I guess. And people absolutely must hear that story on Christmas Eve. It's just a great tradition.
And we will air that Christmas Eve, 8 o'clock on the Ideas Network, as it happens. I know that because we did the day after repeat, I would hear it often because I was here on Christmas morning.
Day.
So, yeah.
Morning.
Yeah. Bruce in Wausau, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to share with you my favorite As It Happens story.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a gentleman who was in a watchtower in a remote lake in northern Canada, and he saw a UFO go across the water. And the way this person described what he saw, the lights, the colors, and all his emotions, I felt like I was in the watchtower with him as this happened. So it was very colorful. It is online if you can look it up, UFO or whatever, on the As It Happens thing. But that was my favorite story.
Okay. Do you remember that one, Mary?
Yeah, I was just thinking that it makes me think of the power of words.
Mm-hmm.
The wonderful thing about radio is that you have the human voice. You only have words and music. And the human voice is a wonderful sound. And the use of words to paint pictures, which leave more to the imagination, as we all know, than actual pictures do, supplied by television or film, can be very rich.
Absolutely. So yeah. We only have about a minute or so to go. Mm. I'm wondering, what are you doing now? Are you just enjoying a retired life, or are you working on other programs?
Yeah, no, I spent most of the last mm-hmm. year writing and editing and researching the As It Happens files.
Sure.
A radio that may contain nuts. And now I'm sort of trying to get that out to people. So I'm busy. I'm in the retail business at the moment. Then there's Christmas. I'm not sure what my next project will be. Perhaps more memories.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. It's been so nice.
Mary Lou Finley, author of the As It Happens Files, Radio That May Contain Nuts, talking about some of the marvelous moments from the CBC radio program As It Happens, which just celebrated its 40th anniversary in November. The book is not yet available in the United States, but can be purchased through the internet. You can try Amazon.ca. And you might want to check out the As It Happens website. Apparently, there is a CD available of the book on the CBC website as well. So thanks to Mary Lou Finley. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour. Thanks to Bill Martins and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, you can call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.